Oh wow, Linux is on GitHub?
Yeah, and then
Yeah. I wasn't sure if is that official or is that just he's just playing with it or
that's him. He's got I think currently two repositories.
That's about as much a seal of approval as you can give, I guess.
Well, he's already criticized it. He wrote a little post about it.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I forget exactly what the details were, but there are some things he didn't like about it. I think he didn't like that you could add issues so easily, something like that.
Oh, can you lock that down per repository, I wonder? Probably not.
I don't know.
Probably not if it's public. Well, how have y'all's weeks been?
Not too bad, I suppose. I actually haven't, other than work, regular work, I haven't been doing much on the computer.
Same here.
Me
big,
too.
Big weekend followed, and I didn't do anything on the computer all weekend.
What did you do all weekend?
Relaxed, because it was the holiday.
That makes sense. Actually, I have to admit, I had to do a little bit of work on Labor Day itself, but my other days were good. Did some cooking or food. I guess this cooking only. Does cooking have to include the stove heating things? Because I don't think I actually.
No.
All right. Well, I did some cooking.
What did you heat things with then?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't. No, I mean I didn't heat it at all. It was all raw stuff.
That's not cooking then.
That's what I was asking.
That's food preparation.
Sushi. Yeah, preparation.
Preparation. Okay. Well, I prepared food.
You did the what was that thing you did?
That was a pesto and sun-dried tomato torta.
Torta. That was really good. You haven't shared the recipe yet.
Oh, no, I haven't. Ah, I will.
I made some pesto after that.
Oh yeah? Use walnuts?
And cashews.
Mmm.
And it was awesome.
Bless you.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I'll share the link. And Stipe. Bam.
Oh, good. Stipe is a Y Combinator startup.
Wow.
Is it?
Oh, cool.
So, oh, there's chat here, too. Do they all just say me?
Nice username.
Does it say me to you?
No, it says user 4E6813611B4D61000100058.
Whoa. So how do you...
Can you repeat that?
I don't think you want me to.
So the chat feature is way more exciting than actual word processing.
This is not very interesting so far. Let's get to some meat.
All right.
I had a burger for dinner.
Well, that kind of meat. Oh. The stuff that people came here to listen to.
What did they come here to listen to?
I also had a burger for dinner.
Did you make it yourself, or?
No. No, it was a Burger Wednesday, pint and a burger for $10.
Oh, nice. Where is that? Delicious.
So this place, West Egg.
Oh, yeah, you eat there a lot, don't you? I see a lot of pictures and posts about that.
Oh, yeah, that's great. And they have a pretty website, too. And I know that their website is powered by Django, because one time I went to a page and I got a stack trace.
Ha ha.
Yeah.
Don't you love that?
Yeah.
Is that a chain?
No, it's an Atlanta one-of-a-kind place.
Oh.
It is Great Gatsby-themed, as the name suggests. It's delicious. Their website has some funny CSS going on right now, though. Ooh, that's funny.
How do you spell torta?
T-O-R-T-A?
Looks
what
good.
Do you do?
Hmm? What? Kale?
No, I just said that looks good.
Woohoo!
What's that?
I'm adding, Jason needs to add the recipe for his torta into the notes.
Okay.
Okay, so let's build up to a big beginning.
So, who worked on the Rails project?
I worked on a Rails project, but it was 3.0. It wasn't 3.1. It was a previous thing, so I have not played with the pipeline at all. Thought about upgrading, but it was daunting.
Shame on you.
Yeah, you can actually... it's not that big of a deal to upgrade, from what I understand, because it's all opt-in kind of stuff. You can actually start using... You can just basically switch your gem. If you're using, you know, your gem file, you can just switch it to Rails 3.1 and bundle update. And I don't think there's only a couple of things you have to change, one or two, really and maybe not even, I don't know if there's that much. As long as, you know, you're using the latest gems that are all compatible with 3.1, I think you can just start using it. And then if you want to use the ASAP pipeline, you can add a few bits of code here and there that get it all hooked up.
Oh, nice. I just searched upgrading to Rails 3.1, and 2 days ago there was a new Rails cast.
Yeah, I saw that today. That's actually where I got that info.
Oh, excellent. Those are always good. Always. Talking about Foreman. He's got one on Foreman. That is something that Heroku has been using lately.
Yeah, that's...
Is that the guy with the grill?
What?
Yes. Could be where they got that name. Waiting for Jason to get it.
No, Jason haven't.
What?
George Foreman.
Oh, the grill. That guy, I thought you were talking about a different kind of grill. Yes, that is the guy with the grill.
Were you thinking the kind you wear on your teeth?
That's exactly what Jason was thinking.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Actually, that is what I was thinking.
What is wrong with you people?
I don't know. All right.
So, Jason, did you do anything with Rails 3.1?
I researched it. Read about it. I read the release notes. I read a few articles. I read the guide to the ASAP pipeline. Things like that. And I did create myself... an RVM gem set for it and installed it and created a project so that I could sort of visualize things. And most of what I spent my time on was trying to figure out how to get my current workflow and the ASAP pipeline workflow merged together, because I have a very specific way I deal with assets. That's, like I think I mentioned before, is similar to the ASAP pipeline. For a while now, I've been separating out my vendor style SaaS and my custom SaaS per application. And the same thing with JavaScript. And I also have been, manually concatenating and minifying my JavaScript files, and I've been creating separate JavaScript files for each controller, usually, or each purpose anyway. So I already have my own workflow, and I've been trying to figure out how to combine those, because there's a couple of things, couple of tricky ways to get things working for me personally. One is, I've always kept, because I actually didn't have a, I wasn't using any sort of utility like Sprockets or anything like that. I was actually just keeping all my JavaScript and SAS files in public, you know, under JavaScripts and style sheets. And sort of the traditional way with SAS, where I have a SAS folder inside of my style sheets folder. And then I keep a folder inside of SAS called vendor and a folder inside of SAS called application. And I put all that stuff in there, all partials. And then I have sort of a basically like a manifest where I do all of my SAS importing in one file. Or maybe two or three if I need very different style sheets, like an entirely different style sheet for the front end as opposed to the like an admin area. So sometimes I'll have two style sheets, and sometimes I'll have one for print and one for screen. But generally, I try to keep all of my styles in one file, which is easy to do with SAS because you can actually keep things in separate files, SAS partials, which start with an underscore. And then you can import them all into one style sheet or one SAS file, and it'll put them all, stick them all together. And since it's so easy to do nesting, I just have a class on my body on the body of each page that is the controller and usually the controller name and sometimes like the namespace if I need to. So I can just nest all of my CSS under those specific specific body classes if I need to.
JavaScript also check for that class?
No, I usually do JavaScript a little bit differently. I basically just check for the existence of whatever I'm going to be working on with jQuery.
Okay.
Although that's not a bad idea if I wanted to, you know, keep it to only a controller, a specific page or something like that. So getting all that moved over to the new asset pipeline, one of the things I noticed is the CSS manifest where you list all of the files you want to concatenate together is... it uses sprockets to do that. It does not use the SAS includes. And when you are not using SAS includes, SAS doesn't know about the various files. It does them one at a time, which means I usually have a SAS file called colors.sas, and I keep all of my color variables in there. And I name all of my colors so I can use them for other things. And I don't think that'll work with sprockets because it takes that color.sas, converts it to CSS, and ends up with an empty file. And then it can't utilize that for the other files. So I think I'm going to use SAS includes instead of the standard manifest style for my SAS files. JavaScript, on the other hand, should work just fine. The only other issue I had is I don't know if I really like sticking my JavaScript and CSS and SAS files all the way out in vendor and all the way over in lib. If I just want to, I've always had them all under JavaScripts and then I separated them in subfolders under that. Or set all under style sheets. And I kind of like to keep them closer together, if that makes any sense. So I think I might just, like, vendor, I guess, might be with, I don't know if gems create any sort of JavaScript files or SAS files in vendor, or like if there's some sort of generator, because I think you don't have to do that anymore. I think style sheets can stay in the gems and don't have to be generated. So I might not use the whole vendor and lib folders for my JavaScript to CSS as much as they, you know, recommend it. Does all that make sense?
Yes.
So that's my thoughts so far.
Is your CSS generated on every page request, or do you build it out and cache it in static files before you deploy?
Yep, I build it up and basically the way it worked in Rails 3.0 and before, if you have the SAS gem, if you're running that, every time you request a page, if there's any SAS that needs to be updated, it will, or any CSS that needs to be updated, it'll re-export it all as CSS. So basically, there's nothing really to do at production time because it's all been generated as you're going in development. And I automatically have it sort of minify all of it. On the JavaScript side, though, I use YUI compressor or UE compressor or whatever to handle all my JavaScript stuff right before deployment.
Do you deploy that to Heroku?
Yes.
And
you can't do anything on the fly on Heroku. It's a read-only file system.
Yeah, that leads to some good things. It was frustrating at first, but now I kind of think that it has led to some performance improvements.
Yeah, and it's the nice thing is Rails 3.1 has a they have that handled. You run a rake task, and it exports all or sets up all of your JavaScript and CSS files with their little hashes in the name and everything, and it exports all that as static files before you, with a rake task before you need to deploy.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, because I was worried about that. I was worried that I wasn't that Heroku was going to have that we were going to have some sort of workaround with Heroku, because I was worried that the asset pipeline would require it to build those. In production, I didn't. I was concerned that I wouldn't be able to just run something to get all my static stuff.
Kale hasn't said if you.
I haven't created anything, but I did go through and read, the release notes and such. I'll just say that that's impressive how focused they are on being efficient. And really enjoyed reading about how they're separating everything out based on view and that kind of thing. So everything's rendering, you're only rendering the information that you really need at that time.
Yeah.
I found that stuff really, really cool. I really like the philosophy behind it.
Hmm. Are you talking about assets or are you talking about other things?
Yeah, well, from what I read, it was the styling and the JavaScript and that kind of stuff. So you're not loading a bunch of CSS that was really for some other part of the site.
Right.
You're only looking at that one view.
Oh, the other thing I noticed about 3.1, I have this sort of standard set of gems that I use for everything, and I popped that into my gem file in my newly created Rails 3.1 app, and found out that Metaware didn't work, isn't compatible with 3.1, which if I had been following along with their site, I would have realized that. But I had no idea that it's been replaced by Squeal, so I had to learn about Squeal, because my favorite add-on to Active Record is Metaware.
And what is Meta... What is it called? Meta what?
Metaware, in WHERE. It is basically it's extra extra syntax and stuff for building queries without having to put SQL in your where clauses or in your where when you're building a query in Active Record. And because by default, like the ARAIL stuff in Active Record does not allow you to it doesn't make it easy to do things like something is not equal to something, or where something is like something. You have to actually, before Metaware, I was having to actually get a hold of the ARL table object and do stuff with it. Whereas Metaware, hang on, let me find it, lets you do all kinds of really fun things.
I put something I found in the show notes for Metaware. I don't know if that's the...
Where did you put it?
In the Stipe.
I mean, oh, there it is. Yes, that's it. That's the exact link. That's the homepage of that. But he stopped. That's not no longer being developed because it's it was completely rewritten as Squeal, I believe. And Squeal is... does all a lot of the same stuff, but quite a bit different syntax. Yeah.
Oh, it's by the same guy.
Yeah.
Great.
But completely, like I said, completely rewritten. The reason I was asking about, I'm looking at my open tabs here, and the reason I was asking about West Egg earlier, Stephen, was because I've been to a West Egg in Chicago.
Oh, nice.
But it's apparently a different place. This is actually like a breakfasty, eggy place. I don't know if the one in Atlanta is or not.
I am searching the one in Chicago up. This one is too, but it does look a little different.
But if you look over the examples on the Metaware page, or Squeal, I suppose, I briefly skimmed over the Squeal information documentation, but I'm very familiar with Metaware, and if you look over either of those, you'll see the advantages of nice fun things you can do with it. You can chain all kinds of stuff to get really get most of what you need out of your where clauses.
That's great. I can use that immediately.
Well, yeah. Excellent. Yeah, basically, I have a few gems that I just automatically stick into every project, and that's Metaware has always been one.
Have you used Rails admin? It's like a drop-in admin, a lot like the Django admin interface.
I have not.
That's one that I've been using quite a bit.
We should have a gem sharing session sometime. Episode.
Rails. It's really fantastic, but recently they stopped developing for 3.0 and they created a new branch just for 3.1. And... see, there's master, and then there's Rails 3.0. Yeah. It kind of broke some compatibility, so I haven't gone in to look at the new stuff yet with Rails 3.1. However, it's a really pretty interface. It's completely customizable, and it does a good job of figuring out how you want to have an interface for your data, just like Django did.
Okay. I haven't actually... I think Trey might have shown me the Django admin, but I've never really looked at it much. I'm completely Django illiterate.
Django admin is pretty great. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty neat.
The Rails admin, I believe, came from a Google Summer of Code project.
Yeah, the interface looks nice.
I agree. Yeah, it's really, really good looking.
Just based off the screenshots, anyway.
I'll have to take a look at it.
I've used this on a few projects already, and I haven't had any complaints.
That's something that you see. I always assume those sort of admin things were not really for. I always just figured they were for sort of dealing with data until you get something else built. But you're using it for production stuff.
Yes, but it was kind of get it out the door right away, production stuff.
Yeah, it seems like there's kind of more use for something like Expression Engine or some other like CMS framework for doing stuff like that. I don't know.
I've never really had enough stuff that was generic enough, I guess, to use an admin interface, a pre-built admin interface, especially with the people, I mean, the clients I have they're not. My job basically is to allow them to completely forget about the organization of the data and make an interface that's very different because they don't think in same kind of terms.
Have you looked at Harvest or Verb?
Are you talking about for websites?
For CMSs.
Are you talking about, like, Verb, like the service?
VIRB, that used to be a MySpace clone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's now a CMS.
I knew that it was a CMS now, but I didn't know much about it. I haven't looked at it really. Because I used to have an account when it was back in the old days. And
yeah. Do you keep getting notices?
Yeah.
Pay
Verb
for this.
Has redesigned. Look at that.
It's very much, it seems to me very much like Harvest, but not as technical. And
was that Harmony or Harvest?
Harmony. Is that what I'm thinking of?
I'm thinking Harmony. It's the one that's built on top of Rails.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm talking about.
I ordered a list.
Yes. Sorry. That's what I meant.
Okay. Yeah. That's really nice. I've got something in production from that. It was enjoyable.
I so like the idea of these hosted CMSs. And I kind of hate Expression Engine. Just put that out there.
I do too.
Oh, good. I'm glad I'm in good company.
Yeah.
Yeah, the few times I've tried to mess with it, I've not liked Expression Engine at all.
I don't like editing code in the text area. I know
exactly.
You can do Expression Engine. You can put it in Git and you can serve it from flat files, but I understand that it's a big performance hit.
God. What a wretched thing.
And it's just you're editing code and it's in Arial in a text area.
Oh, really?
And you're doing it live.
See, the few times I did mess with it, I would just copy paste in all of my code into those text areas because I can't imagine trying to edit it in there.
You can tick a little checkbox that says save this as a file, and you have to do that, and then it like updates the database, and then you can put a file and on the system somewhere, and then it will. Look at that file if you've checked the little checkbox. Yeah. It's very, very popular. People love it.
Expression Engine?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't understand it, but
I'd rather use WordPress as a CMS, and that's horrible.
Well, if we're going with that kind of stuff, my preference would be Concrete 5.
I just typed it in. The notes. I knew you were going to say
that. You knew I was going to say that.
Yeah. I still have never used it, but it looks good.
It's a great for a hosted or a self-hosted PHP CMS. It's great. It's sort of half framework, half CMS. You can extend it really easily and extensively, but then also it's super easy for people who have no computer, website experience to edit, because it's all in-page editing, which I'm completely pro as opposed to having to have a separate admin area. I mean, it does have an admin area for other things, but if you're going to edit pages, you actually go to the page and you click on the area you want to edit and edit it there.
Mm-hmm. Have you played around with Perch?
No, I've heard of it. I think I might have.
I've heard good things about it. Was it Ryan, what's his name, from 37 Signals always tweets about how much he loves it?
Maybe. I heard about it from a Zeldman tweet, I think. First time. It's very simple.
Perch. I see Perch. Let's see. Does it also do in-page, on-page editing?
It doesn't, so in that sense it's not quite as good for...
Oh, yeah, I remember Perch is... Yeah, it's very simple. It just sort of... sort of just very basic database-y kind of thing. There's a Rails CMS. Oh boy, let's see. I don't know if I bookmarked it or not. That I was going to look into. That looked really nice. Possibly. There were two of them. One of them, well, actually three, but one of them, they hadn't updated it in a while. The development was going really slow, so I hadn't messed with it. Actually, I shouldn't say going slow, but it seemed slow. They may have been working on it a lot, but browser CMS looked great, but it took them a long time to get it updated to Rails 3.0. And I don't know if they're on the way to 3.1 yet or not, or if they have. I haven't looked at it in a while. But there are some newer ones. One of them is called Locomotive, I think, is one of them that I was looking at. I think that's the one that maybe MongoDB backed, which is a great for a it totally makes sense to me in my mind to have your CMS database Mongo, because you're dealing with documents really in a website, and it just seemed very modern in a lot of ways.
Found that added the link. That does look good.
So that's, I think that was the main one I was leaning toward if I were going to try to experiment with a new CMS.
An upcoming feature for Locomotive is inline editing.
Aha, fantastic. That's going to make it even better.
I've seen is called Copycopter. It's from the Thoughtbot guys. They do Poptoad, which was renamed recently. And it's kind of I understand that you edit the copy on your site, or you let someone else edit the copy, and it just magically appears, and that's all there is to it.
Huh. Copycopter.
Yeah.
I like the Thoughtbot guys and that stuff, the Thoughtbot stuff.
It's very pretty.
I like Hoptoad. I use it, and I like it.
I've never used it. I was going to at one point, and I never followed through. Is that just for like exceptions and stuff? What exactly is that?
Yes, an exception.
Okay. I was using exceptional for a while.
Mix it all the way up, then you get a notification, and you can get emails or anything else you want immediately.
Okay, there's an app called Exceptional that does a similar thing, but I tried Exceptional for a while, and I decided that it really hardly did anything more than just the standard exception notifier gem that you can get for emails. But I'm interested in Hoptoad to see if it does anything more.
Hoptoad was just renamed Airbrake.
Huh.
Over, what was it? Some lawsuit, I believe.
Oh.
Somebody else who thought they had Hoptoad down. Or who had frogs. They had frogs down.
Huh. So what does it do besides just notifying you of exceptions? What are the advantages over just getting an email from the standard exception notifier, Jim?
I just, you know, the pretty UI that you can log into, and you can I think it's more of a friendly experience, but I, yeah. You know, I don't have firsthand experience using the exception notifier. But it will take similar exceptions and group them together for you.
That's handy. Yeah, I guess, you know, when I was using exceptional, I think a lot of the features that would have set it apart were like pro features, and I didn't like the free version enough to try out the pro version, although it may have made up the difference. Well, that's cool. Hoptoad has some easy integration into Heroku, doesn't it?
Yes. That's another thing. They have it built right in.
Nice. I like things that are built in Heroku because I like Heroku.
Even though it's owned by Salesforce now?
Well, yeah, so far, so good. Although I do have an issue that has become a deal breaker for me for one app, and I'm having to move it away from Heroku.
Oh, what is that deal breaker?
Heroku uses, for every app that Heroku hosts, from what I understand, they have 3 public IP addresses, and they balance from there. They basically, it's everything goes to one of 3 IP addresses, and those 3 IP addresses are blocked by China. So no Heroku app is available, from what I understand, from within China. And I have one of our apps has to be available globally. And China is a big one for us. So I can't host it on Heroku anymore.
Whoa.
Interesting.
Going to try out Engine Yard. So if you're listening, Heroku, because I know everybody listens to this podcast.
Mm-hmm. If they're smart.
Yeah. Fix that. Get with the Chinese government and get that fixed. Actually, just, you know, having more than 3 IP addresses would probably resolve that. Because if one app is blocked by China, then all of Heroku is blocked by China. I don't know. They said the only thing we could do is, like, I think you can get your own custom IP address if you set it up as a SSL a secure website, but if you do that on Heroku, and if you do it in that way, it's like, I don't know, it's very expensive.
Let's see. In the show notes, that brings us to Linux on GitHub.
Didn't we talk about that?
Linux is on GitHub?
Holy
Linux
shit.
Is on GitHub. And we now have a link to
the comments.
Comments on using GitHub. Some things he does not like at all.
Ah, oh, okay.
We also have you all looked at the Learn Code the Hard Way series from Zed Shaw?
You talked about that last week, didn't you?
I'd looked at Learn Python, but this week I looked over Learn C the Hard Way.
Oh.
And
is there any other way to learn C?
It's completely different.
Huh.
Is it hard?
Yes.
I would think not only would you have to learn C the hard way, you'd have to write it the hard way. Yeah, I have a friend who is actually learning programming. by reading the, I think she actually started on the Python one, but learning programming completely from that.
And it's working.
As far as I know, I'll have to see if I can get an update on that.
Do I know this person?
Nope. Actually, I say friend, but, you know, somebody that I sort of know. Let's see. But, yeah, I mean, I've looked over the book a little bit, and one of those, I think the the Python one, seems to be a good way to do things. What are your thoughts, Steven?
I like the way he approaches it, and he has you just type in an exercise. Don't copy and paste, and if you actually type it in, he really builds it up in a way that makes sense.
That is definitely harder than copy-pasting.
And it works better than just reading about it in a dense book. You know, getting hands-on with what you're doing. He shows you ways to break things, and he encourages you to change things, run it again, look at the exceptions, look at what happens. It's good stuff. I'm looking forward to more in this series. Hmm. Especially if you would get into some of those really odd languages. Odd to me, just not often used in web programming. Or mm-hmm. I mean, maybe if they could get into... I know he's a big Lua fan.
Ah, yes.
That would be interesting, and so would some of those functional languages that I keep hearing about. Scala, something like that.
You still into functional stuff, Steven?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do write JavaScript every day, and in a lot of ways that is... You can apply, that is a functional language, and you can apply a lot of those principles to your JavaScript code.
Really?
Yeah.
I still don't understand what functional means. I thought you didn't have variables or something like that.
A lot of, what I understand is that things are immutable. You don't change things. You don't change state. I think that's what makes it pure. There are no side effects to your functions. But in terms of JavaScript, I mean, you can pass functions around as arguments to other functions, and a function can return a function. So that's some higher order programming type stuff, which libraries like jQuery take advantage of a lot of that in a way that you don't really see.
And being able to do that is a functional style?
Well, it's not really the pure functional style, no. But JavaScript has that capability. Am I right there? Jason, do you get into any of that? Kale?
Are you talking about, like, I think it might have been you. Somebody posted a link to a little, sort of a little instructional bit about that, if I remember right. And that was what helped me understand it much better. I can't remember now where it was.
Have you read that book, Eloquent in JavaScript? That was really nice. And it has a whole chapter about functional programming. I think the whole book's available online. Here we go. Functional programming. You can get it on your Kindle too. I love my Kindle.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's great.
A good thing?
It is good.
Interested to see what that Kindle tablet is going to be all about.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes. It's supposed to be the only real competitor for the iPad.
Hmm.
I hope so. I hope there's some competition coming.
Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so functional programming, it just avoids keeping track of state or mutable data, anything that you can change. It all uses functions, function after function. I mean, that's all you work with.
Hence the name.
Yes. As opposed to imperative programming, which is like, say PHP is an imperative, it's a procedural language. You cannot do functional programming in PHP in the same way that you can in JavaScript, even though their syntax looks pretty similar.
What about Ruby?
I believe it's kind of an imperative language, but you can do functional programming in Ruby. I know because I've seen presentations about it, but Ruby is not a strictly functional language.
Not even as much as JavaScript is.
Right.
Are strictly object-oriented languages and functional type languages, are they sort of mutually exclusive in a way?
I don't think so, no.
There's a lot of silence when we're not exactly sure what we're talking about.
Yeah. I was looking into that. I don't believe so, no. But yeah, again, this is learning. I used to work with a guy that was a big Haskell enthusiast, and that is a purely functional language. With static typing. It's pretty space age.
I'm really trying to remember now. I wish I could remember what that website was, that link. Steven, do you remember a website, a guy that sort of has some JavaScript?
Was it interactive? Was it an interactive tutorial?
Yeah.
Ooh, yes.
That's how I was able to get, learn functional programming in JavaScript. It's a link you had. I worked through that whole thing, and it really...
I thought that was really great.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Clarified things for me a lot. I just have no idea how to get back there.
Right. I will find it, though.
I thought I bookmarked it because he had other exercises. I wanted to go through everything. But apparently I did not.
Ooh, I believe Pinboard keeps different versions of tags of JavaScript, whether it's capitalized correctly or not. Right?
Case-sensitive tags?
Oh, the tags are not case-sensitive, but the tag cloud is.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'll find that, though. That was really handy. There's another one similar to that that's done by John Resig. Helps you kind of wrap your head around advanced JavaScript. Let's see, it's ejohn.org/apps/learn. Here we go. Sean Rezig JavaScript tutorial. It's very cool. Helps you get your head around closures and scope and using the prototypes.
I wonder if that's...
Context. This is different, but it's very similar to that other one.
Ah.
Yeah, that other one that you were talking about, though, I did go all the way through, and that last one was really difficult.
Maybe I didn't get to the very end of it, because I remember getting through most of it, and then I might have didn't have time to finish it. Is that how talk goes?
Good job.
Do you write a lot of JavaScript daily? Anybody?
Yes. I mean,
you say you write it every day that you work?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I'd say I write it not every day, but just about. I have to do a lot of back-end stuff. So if I'm working on that kind of stuff for a few days, I might not do JavaScript. But most of the time, yeah. Definitely for every project, I write a lot of JavaScript. Probably not as advanced and elaborate as I would like. I still haven't gotten to the point where I'm doing a lot of I haven't gotten to the point where I'm needing a framework and doing a lot of MVC stuff all in JavaScript or anything like that.
That stuff gets pretty interesting. There's a lot of good frameworks out there for that, which I think we talked about a bit.
Yeah, I know we started looking at doing some stuff with Backbone, but I don't know if anybody finished that, or I don't know if we shared stuff about that. I might have been gone.
No. I guess we talked about it. We talked about Backbone, but we didn't do any projects or anything.
Yeah, I'm definitely lighter on the JavaScript side of things, scripting in general. Definitely been more visual design, actually, as of late. Definitely have a lot to learn.
Well, you've done a lot of ActionScript, though, right?
Done a couple little games here and there, but that's mostly been procedural type ActionScript. Very basic.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
ActionScript is so object-oriented when it comes to, well, at least visual objects.
Yeah, that was part of one of my first real big, dives into coding in general and scripting. And so really started off very basic. Now, a lot of the books that are specifically written for Flash gaming, it's interesting. They're all very procedural.
It's interesting. It seems to me that both ActionScript and games would really lend themselves well to object-oriented stuff.
Yeah. I tried to get into that more with ActionScript 3.
Mm-hmm.
That started rolling out.
So, yeah. ActionScript 3 is so much better than 2.
Yeah.
I've never done any ActionScript.
That's okay.
I haven't really either.
Oh, you're not missing much. The front-end web stuff is much more exciting than ActionScript, that's for sure.
It really is. Although, I mean, there's some neat things about it that you can do with Flash and ActionScript. I'd be fine with not ever doing any more of it, probably. ActionScript is basically just a sort of a weird version of JavaScript.
Yeah, syntax and all that is very similar. I don't know, Adobe gets their hands on it and stuff just gets weird to me, so.
Yeah. Stuff gets weird.
Doesn't make sense sometimes, and It's very frustrating.
Yeah. And then, of course, the Flash app itself, or the Flash IDE itself, is just a whole bunch of mess.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally on board of all that going away.
Yeah.
I've had much more fun with this 10K stuff. That's so much easier.
Yeah. Has anybody looked at this? What's this new Adobe animation app?
Oh, no, not the site builder thing, but the HTML5 animation.
Yeah, the HTML5 animate. It's supposed to look, you know, work like Flash, where you have a timeline and keyframes and all that, but it writes everything out in HTML5 and JavaScript. It seems seems like Flash sort of all over again.
Sounds like it. With a twist of Go Live, I think.
Yeah.
The Cintra people have something similar for animation.
What is the Adobe Site Builder thing? Adobe Front Page. What is it?
Yeah, Adobe Front Page. Hang on.
That new one that came out?
Muse. That's it. Looks kind of horrible.
By the way, found the thing on JavaScript.
I saw that. That's it. That's the one.
Nathan's JS lessons.appspot.
Yep.
That's cool.
Go there, Trey.
That'll help.
That's what helped me.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Thank you.
Gets you into asynchronous callbacks, and the last part was continuation passing.
Yeah, I don't think I got quite that far. Maybe not.
Each one, though, they show you some concepts, and then they give you a puzzle to solve based on what they just showed you.
Huh.
And you submit it, and it runs it against a test suite, and if all the assertions pass, you go on to the next.
Neat.
Very cool.
What, Jason, why were you saying this is for me?
Oh, if you want
to understand functional?
Learn about...
does help with that, yeah. With returning functions and passing functions as values, and understanding what a side effect is in regards to functions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it covers all that.
Cool.
Yeah, that whole closure thing was... I never really had it that easily organized in my head until I did that, until I ran through that little... lesson.
Cool.
Yes, there it is. Adobe Edge, I think, is the animation. The Adobe animation thing.
I read something today about something from Strobe. A new platform for building HTML5-based web applications.
Was that in the HTML5 newsletter?
Yeah, it's co-founded by a bunch of guys from the Rails core team.
Wait, are you talking about, like, Strobe has something besides Sprout Core?
Right, they just announced it.
Huh.
And, yeah, it's really interesting looking, but I can't tell much about it. The Strobe platform is what it's called. Complete set of tools. So I'm interested to hear what that's all about when somebody plays around with it, figures out. Oh, you got to get access to the private beta, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, use his phone.
So
gap.
Basically, it looks like. It looks like it involves HTML5 and Sprout Core and all that stuff. It's just...
They do point out that it doesn't require Sprout Core.
Huh. Okay.
You're not just forced to use their technologies.
So what is it then? I think I remember hearing about this, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm interested to see that. They've got an image showing how it works.
Yeah. that graphic that's
yeah. What does it
all
mean?
Crazy looking.
Streaming proxy.
It looks like a whole bunch of craziness. It's a bunch of words and little icons.
Yeah, where's the browser?
There is no browser. It's only you.
Whoa.
It goes straight from the strobe mesh through all that other stuff straight to your face.
I wonder if they built it on... Actually, yeah, I believe that, yeah, the whole thing's responsive, right? No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Maybe if you were to go there on your... If you do go there on your phone, though, you get a different experience. I know, because I did that earlier today.
API calls. Devices. This is a hosted thing. What is this?
Looks like TechCrunch has a decent write-up on it all.
Huh.
Yeah, the site looks a lot different than the iPhone. Looks cool.
Well.
Not
do you
responsive.
Just have to go to m. dot? Yep, m. dot. Just replace the www with m, and there you've got it.
I get not found. Oh.
M. dot strobe well, core.
Go to the home page.
Right. That'll be on the home. Interesting.
Oh, I see. There is a different thing on the phone. I finally got it on my, finally looking at it on my phone over here. I'm a little behind the times.
But before we go, though, do you want to tell us about pesto with cashews and walnuts?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Trey, your thing, your cashew and walnuts. How did that turn out? Delicious.
Yeah.
What's your recipe? You said you posted your recipe, didn't you?
Yeah, it's in the Stipe notes. It's on egg and toast.
I've been encouraging family to use that.
Nice.
And they have been.
Yeah? Are you laughing, Jason?
I just, I like your really general ingredient list.
I like a simple recipe. Would you like to give a dramatic reading of it?
I would need to rehearse a little bit first.
You sure? You don't want to give it a little quick shot?
No, I don't. All right. Not right now. All right. I'd have to have more whiskey.
This looks different on my iPhone than the browser. How do you do that?
What?
The egg and toast.
It's some media queries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not responsive, but they're media queries.
Oh, okay.
I need to...
So, go on.
All right, go ahead.
Jason, go.
No.
Stephen,
I was
going to
say, so that it is kind of responsive, and but people love to argue about what that means. And
well, according to the book, responsive means flexible grid.
Okay.
And then flexible images. And media queries. That's according to Hoyle, a.k.a. Ethan Marcotte.
Okay.
RWD. But, I mean, it is... So, I guess it's not fluid in that it doesn't pop to those other media queries just by resizing the browser. It's actually looking at the browser capability, the screen width, yeah. Not the browser width.
I'd say that's responsive.
Then it's responsive. Kinda.
But maybe not responsive with the trademark.
Exactly.
You know what I like, Jay?
What's that?
Is it egg and toast? It's abbreviated EAT.
Oh,
yeah.
I meant to do that.
Ooh.
That's nice.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's like a...
It's your logo.
Mm.
Cause and effect kind of thing.
Damn.
That's good.
Oh. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
I was, I had my sound muted for a while there. I had heard nothing. I was just talking. sorry, guys.
You had...
Let's edit that out.
Eggie.
Oh, man. Everybody visit eggie.com for your precision website design.
That's good.
Needs.
I think I'm going to steal that background image.
Tiled backgrounds. Oh, wow.
It's a hard-boiled egg.
Last modified August 28th, 1998.
I believe it.
Best viewed of Netscape 4.
Chrome is doing its best.
Oh, you can crack the egg. Mouse over that egg.
Oh.
So, Trey, what's the... Sort of, what kind of conventions do you have as far as recipe cards and this egg and toast?
In terms of the formatting, or...?
Yeah.
None.
It's whatever.
It's whatever. It's a markdown-friendly text area. And it's got the WMD kind of pseudo WYSIWYG thing, which I realize is not ideal, and I need to put some form of real WYSIWYG there. But because it doesn't help people who don't know Markdown, because it's kind of confusing to use, and it's just in the way if you do know Markdown,
right?
But so I need to do something else there, but. The format being just open like it is, I really like. Because most recipe websites have, like, you know, this is your list of ingredients, here are the measurements, here's the instructions, here's the cooking time, here's the relative difficulty, here's your star rating, and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And I want it to be, like, the same kind of thing as when you have a recipe card in a box. You share with people. There's no specific parts of that card that you write. Those different things, you just format it how you want, and then you share it.
Well, that's cool.
So yeah. So I think the only
advantage to having like special place where you put your amounts of ingredients and your ingredients and your measurements is so that you can do you can double recipes or half recipes or something like that easily.
Mm-hmm.
And also so you can create a shopping list.
Yeah. 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 Those are nice.
But like I said, cards worked for years. So.
Right. And I like the idea. I have some recipes that's just a paragraph of text, and I have some recipes that's just a bulleted list.
Mm.
And you know, personally, I like it that way. And I haven't had the only feature request I've had of the you know dozen people who use the site is photos.
That would be nice. I really like looking at something I'm going to make.
And well, photos, and then having a friend list so you can follow other people.
Yeah, that would be really nice as well.
So those are things I'm going to add eventually.
Can you get on that?
Yeah, I'm going to rewrite it in
Markdown
Rails
extra
first.
Or just Markdown.
You know, I'm not sure now. It's whatever Markdown libraries in Python. And it's been a long time since I did this, so I don't remember off the top of my head.
I want to have
tables. Try it. Go get in there and see what it does. Are you on here, Jason?
I am now.
Oh, you're not just Jason. That's Jason Tan.
Yep. You snooze, you lose.
What's your username?
JTJ.
Woohoo! Yeah, this site was written in the course of a week, and it shows. I mean, it's functional, but there's really not much to it.
Yeah, but you got it out there.
I did.
That's the important thing. And people are using it. See, yeah. It's much better than having an idea.
Yeah.
Having it ferment.
Hot dog tacos.
What's that, Grail?
Having
hot
it ferment.
Hot dog tacos.
Ooh, yeah. I do have the hot dog tacos card. And it. That was one of my first. The real gems in there are the postum cake.
I remember looking at that one.
Yeah, you can find postum anywhere.
I've used your yummy spinach recipe.
Oh, good. That is so easy.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yummy spinach?
Heat until smell fills kitchen.
That's the kind of instructions I love.
Yeah,
I'm... One little aspect of the site I really like is when you go to add a new recipe, and next to the add button, there is a little note that says simple is best.
I see that, yes.
That's what it's all about.
Oh, I can subscribe to your newsletter. Will you send out recipes each week when it comes around?
I'm hoping for ideas. I haven't actually sent anything.
Well, I have signed up.
Sweet. So, Kale, how many people have signed up to the garden blog?
I haven't checked lately, but it's just a very small handful. I've gotten a lot of feedback.
So, anybody here still use Google Plus?
Occasionally.
I do when I want to find out what's going on with Kevin.
Exactly.
Not in.
Yeah, I keep forgetting.
Me too.
That's the problem with the new social networks. That's the challenge for new social networks.
Yeah. I think when their API comes out, that'll help, but hopefully it's not too late.
Yeah, I rarely check it now.
Do you guys use Facebook?
Rarely.
Not much.
I do check it every day, yeah. At least I just look at it, but usually I use it every day.
Hmm.
Currently has the most recent mustache picture. Let me see, how do I... They've done something to where you cannot just right-click on a photo and save it. They've covered it with this div that keeps you from saving it. You can just go to the network panel and grab it.
You love the network panel.
I love the network panel. Yeah. It's great. There you go.
Trey?
Yes, sir?
This is not working.
What isn't?
This markdown.
What are you trying to do?
Trying to add a recipe. And I put a
table
ordered list after a unordered list, and
oh yeah, it's a little twitchy if you put something in between the lists.
Huh. Weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little twitchy.
Ooh, another thing.
Is it gonna do that when I say it?
In that Eloquent JavaScript book, they teach you to implement something that's a lot like Markdown in a very eloquent way. It's surprising. It seems like a daunting task, but you implement something really similar to it.
Hmm. Trey, what's this field underneath my card here?
It's the secret field. It's tags.
Tags.
Yeah. Should be just space delimited.
Oh, I do have tags. Oh, good.
I'm going to tag everything with food. And a recipe.
Ass.
I did, on several of mine, I created related recipe links. I wonder if that's something that a lot of people would need. Like, maybe you have multiple components that all go together, but you want them to be on separate cards.
Interesting. Like, pesto, and then the pizza that you could put it on?
Yes, well, I did the postum cake, then the icing, and then how to make your own postum if you can't find it anywhere because it was mysteriously discontinued.
Interesting. So you added tags to post home copy?
I just created a an unordered list of
names. Oh, yeah. See, that's how you do it.
You're right. It does leave you a lot of room to do it yourself. I like that.
WTF is post home.
However, one of my favorite features that you mentioned was forking. I don't see how do I fork somebody else's recipe.
At the bottom right of every card says copy this card to your recipe box.
Can you do a pull request?
Uh-huh.
It's called fork in the code, like that's the view controller to you, Jason. but it's not called forking anywhere in the UI.
Yeah. It should be called fork in the pan.
I'm copying your mango salsa.
You should. That's the bomb.
Yum.
And if you notice on that card, it says that this card was lovingly borrowed from Kelpeep. And if you go back to that recipe, it's actually a much bigger recipe for tilapia and mango salsa. And I just wanted the mango salsa. So I copied it and then cut everything else out. And so but you can still trace the lineage of the how that recipe evolved.
Oh, that's great.
Recipe trees, that's cool.
Yeah. And so if you look at Steven's card, all it says is borrowed from Trey, but then you go back there and then you can see the history. Yeah, it's kind of neat.
Borrowed from Trey. Borrowed from people who have borrowed this card. I see. Nice. However, I have not borrowed Kelly's. I've only borrowed yours.
Right.
Yeah, makes sense. And you plan to port this over to another...
Yeah, I'd like to move it over to Rails, maybe on Heroku.
You currently have to manage it yourself. Sysadmin.
Say again?
You're currently sysadmin.
Right, it's on WebFaction right now.
Okay.
Which is fine. It's not bad. And I got the whole Django admin and all that, which I never ever look at. So, it was nice to get it started, but yeah, like Jason said, but it's not all that useful unless I need to go like change someone's password or something. Huh. Apparently 52 users. Most of these people don't use it regularly though.
I'm excited about my new account.
Yes. Oh, one last question. Did any of you submit to 10K?
No.
Getting close.
No. They have accepted a lot more. I submitted mine, but it was rejected for using Google Fonts. So if you're doing that, you might want to not.
Oh, you can't use Google Fonts.
Well, it does say in the rules that you can use any third-party library, including Google Maps. So I assumed, but no. No, you cannot.
That's unfortunate. I'm sorry to hear that.
That's sad. Yeah, trying out Typekit, though.
What's that?
I have to switch mine over because I'm using Google Fonts right now.
Wait, you can use Typekit?
You can. Yeah. It's in the rules. They encourage you to use Typekit.
Why no Google Fonts then?
They're in cahoots.
You can use as many general purpose third party web services as you want. Right there. Says it.
That's ridiculous. I think it is. I think they're in cahoots.
Yeah.
Well, it is sponsored by Microsoft.
Because that's not cool if you can use Typekit but no Google Fonts.
Right. There are 4 libraries you can use without anything counting against you. Typekit, jQuery, Prototype, and Extender. I don't know. I don't know that it's worth making an issue out of, but I am unhappy.
But you are going to make an issue out of it.
Right, but I'm not going to go troll on the Twitter or anything.
I put in my first card.
Pesto JTJ. Summer. Is this your torta?
No, that's just my... That's the pesto I've been making for years. Actually, that's what I use for the torta, not the pesto that's actually included in the original article about the torta. I use my own pesto.
Basil leaves, washed and dried, no stems.
So, very sharp blade.
If what? You don't have a... I found halfway through, I was making a bunch of... recipes of it, and the blade on my food processor got dull, and it was awful. It did not. The basil was sort of like, you know, it left too big of pieces of basil. It ended up being sort of chewy, as opposed to really finely, nice and creamy.
Yeah, I did have to process that stuff that I made. So, have you guys ever grown herbs?
Yeah, a little bit.
So I bought, they had little bags of live basil at Whole Foods, and I thought, I'm going to get a flower pot, put soil in it, and see if that'll just grow. Stick it out on my front porch.
Uh-huh.
I just wondered if you guys had any experience with growing basil or anything.
I've grown basil here in a pot, but not from seed. And
it's not
from the grocery store.
Yeah, right.
Because what you bought...
It's got a lot of dirt in the bottom.
Really?
Huh. Or something, yeah. It's...
That may work. Because, I mean, I've bought like living lettuce and stuff from the grocery store, but that's usually looks like hydroponically grown because it has the roots, but there's no dirt on them.
Uh-huh, okay. We'll see.
Well, that's cool. I'm gonna put a few more recipes on here, I think. The problem is for some reason, some people end up with really good luck with basil, and some people don't have good luck. Stacy and I never have good luck with basil.
My parents usually have a ton of it.
I mean, we can grow it, but it's just very small, whereas we have friends that grow it, and it gets 4 feet high and 3 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
But ours stays just like maybe a foot and a half tall. And I don't know what the deal is there.
Hmm. Kaylee, growing a lot of herbs in your garden?
No herbs. I've got some red lettuce and radishes that I've planted, I guess, a few weeks ago for the fall. So hoping that will turn out well.
Cool.
More of a cool weather type plant. Huh. But yeah, never done herbs before.
We had my mother has given us some pots with herbs in them a few times, and we usually eat off those for a long time. Thyme seems to do well, and chives, and maybe rosemary, I think. They're seem fairly easy to grow in pots, generally, herbs are.
Cool.
And it's really nice to have fresh herbs for cooking right there, because we a lot of times just keep the pots in the kitchen.
Nice, okay.
So they don't need full sun or anything like that?
They probably do better with them, but the thyme and I can't remember what else was in that pot. Was some thyme, but that thyme, maybe oregano. The thyme and oregano seem to be doing okay. And we have, you know, they were sort of near the window, sort of in the window in the kitchen. I mean, they didn't like go crazy, but they lived okay. Sort of like houseplant.
Yeah. Good to know.
Good. I have added a new card to Egg and Toast. You will see it in the recent cards tab. I recommend you all make it tonight.
It's kind of lame. Oh yeah. Okay.
Wow, that's scope. That's not something I. Those are not ingredients I have on hand right now.
151.
Because Danger Juice is all about freedom. Hell yeah.
It's true. It originated here. I have never had Danger Juice without having a hangover.
Why do you so if that's your goal.
That's what makes it so dangerous.
Yes. Hold on, a new tag. Hangover. Update card.
Jeez.
See, that's another thing. Should there be categories for type of food, like beverage?
Well, if you have tags and people properly use the tags,
but who's to say it's proper?
Yeah.
But can you narrow by tag?
Yeah, you can click on tag and. You can't combine. You can't do two tags.
But I mean, can you see an entire list of tags and
of all the tag, like a tag cloud for the whole system?
Yeah. How do I browse all drinks? In other words,
if everyone had tagged something drink, then you could go to
without having to go to a specific recipe first.
No, there's not a way to do that. I mean, now
when you do a search, does it search tags?
Ooh. So if you take the username out of that scheme where it's slash Wyatt Danger slash tagged slash cocktail, just remove the username and it'll go to all cards tagged.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, you can go. You can always go to whatever tagged eggandtoast.com/tag/whatever cocktail.
Nice.
People have tagged things cocktail. Oh, you did.
Here we have cards tagged Postum, and you can get all of those Postum cards together.
Yeah. Good job.
Awesome.
Cool. All right.
Well, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do this again next Wednesday?
Yes.
I won't, like, we haven't been doing good with homework, so.
We don't need it.
We don't need it, and I won't have time to do any before next time.
The whole thing sort of changed focus from sort of an experimentation on new techniques and stuff to more of just a general podcast about recipes and food, really.
In tweeting about it, my friend Travis expressed interest.
Oh, why isn't he calling in?
He's the guy. He wrote Frank. He thought he liked the first podcast that he listened to, and he said he'd like to come on.
Well, he should have called in tonight.
Well, I figured we'd wait a week.
Oh, all right. You're the gatekeeper of new hosts.
I'm not, but
You can be if you want.
I did not offer. But I told him maybe give us a week.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
Steven, you have self-rising flour on hand? You keep self-rising flour on hand?
I just have flour.
Does your pancakes list self-rising flour?
Yes. Italics. You gotta have that.
You just get baking soda and...
Yeah, you can. I think you can mix baking soda and baking powder with regular flour and make it, but
yeah.
I should learn how to do that because certain recipes call for self-rising flour, and I don't ever remember the proper proportions.
Well, if you figure it out, put a card on it.
All right, self-rising flour. Okay. Hot dog tacos.
Not that again.
It's the winner.
That's the title of this episode.
Hot dog tacos.
Yeah.
This is truly I think there's been as much food and recipe talk as there has been web development talk.
Yeah, let's keep that up.
Yeah. I love that you chop up the hot dogs first, then put them in the tortilla. Yeah,
do you cut it up like into like dice it or something?
I use kitchen shears.
Are they really kitchen shears or are they paper scissors that you just wash after you're done?
Depends what's clean.
Yeah.
I guess the paper scissors are always clean because I never put those in the dishwasher. You know,
clean is relative.
I think if I were to make it, I'd put it in the food processor and revert it back to its original mechanically separated meat paste.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Ooh.
Would you take the casing off or just let that go in there?
Oh, right yeah. It depends on what kind of, you know, how powerful your food processor is, how sharp your blade is.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I like to take the casing off the hot dog and just crumble it out.
Is it a corn or a flour tortilla?
Flour.
Okay.
I think that's up to the preference, though, of whoever.
Yeah. You don't like to maybe sear it in a skillet before you put the hot dog and cheese in it?
I think there's a lot of room for improvement with that recipe.
Trey, I think you're trying to make this way too fancy.
This is to put this in context. This is a recipe that my babysitters made for me 20 years ago. Yeah, 20 years ago.
Hot dog tacos. I don't know why no one's copied this recipe yet.
I'm thinking lazy hot dog tacos where you don't cut them up and just throw the dogs in there.
They're sort of in the right shape already.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what I pictured them just being in a tortilla. Just a hot dog. Instead of a bun, it's a tortilla.
Of all the vague words, nobody's questioned the word zap. How do you prefer to zap your hot dog?
Oh yeah, it doesn't mention a microwave, does it?
No.
It says to zap it. So in case you have electricity coming out of your fingers, you can just do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get
that's beautiful.
Emperor Palpatine over here to
zap your hot dog taco.
My hot dog taco.
Oh, that's great. All right, on that note, let's call it quits.
Do you have a line for ending the show?
Hot dog tacos.
Like Anchorman?
I can't remember what he says. Or is that
Stay classy, San Diego.
Okay.
You could just do like a that's all, folks, kind of thing. Or good night, Trey.
Good night, everyone.
And be sure to check out the We're Doing It Live video with a young Bill O'Reilly.
Oh yeah,
I have it already pulled up. I just haven't.
Oh, you've never seen it?
So every time I work an expression engine, I can't help but quote the shit out of it because I'm just terrified that I'm going to break everything.
Yeah.
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 Alrighty then. Well, it's been fun, guys. Yeah. I will hopefully be able to make it next week, maybe.
Cool. And if there's a day that works better for you guys, it does not have to be Wednesday for me.
Yes, it does.
I mean, it has to be Wednesday.
It works pretty well.
It's tradition. It doesn't actually matter to me either.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right.
No, you hang up.
Have a good night, you guys.
All right.
All right.
Night, guys.
Bye.
Bye.